Discussions with Ajahn Chuchin in Bangsai, Thailand, August 2018. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Sarah, John, Azita, and Eve.
We were just discussing about how we may have difficulties adjusting to different situations, like one friend found it difficult to sleep on a bed because she's used to sleeping on the floor, or someone may not be used to the smell in the van. Everyone has their difficulties with different adjustments and different situations. And you were just saying the problem is always the thinking. So if one doesn't think about whether it's the bed or the floor, there's no problem, but it's the thinking that's the difficulty whenever we have difficulty adjusting. Would you say a little more?
I think the problem is it's so very hard to understand reality as not self. Problem always comes when there's the idea of self. But when there is no self at all, how can that be when there are so many things and people around? It has to be the moment of even thinking, just thinking about no one at all. At all. Because even the posture, like in Mahasatipatthana Sutta, just our reality cannot be any posture at all. So in order to develop the understanding of actually there is no one at all, and there are only realities arising at different times, from time to time, that's all. So in order to understand that actually there's no one, there must be the understanding of just our reality at a time, clearer and clearer and clearer. So when there is more and more understanding of our reality, that cannot be taken for posture or breath or anything at all. And it has to be like that, just one can be experienced.
So, and when someone is concerned about the bed or the house or the situation, actually it's just clinging to oneself. One thinks that there's something wrong with the bed or something wrong with the situation, but actually it's just the thinking of oneself and the long story, not understanding anything about Dhamma now.
There is always I. This is a problem. And the goal is until nothing, not even I or anything at all, because that which has arisen has fallen away, completely gone, never to return. So where is that one anymore? Actually, there is nothing. Sunyata, anatta. But all realities are covered up from eons and eons until now.
You just said all realities are covered up. What covers up the reality?
Ignorance, for sure. Because they are just, they are, see? But the idea in ignorance is they are taking it for something all the time. Each moment. Like seeing now.
Like
no idea
now,
about
but
that.
Also like ignorance now. That's just another reality.
Right, but Panya knows, not you know. You think about that, but it's you. That's why it said that all five khandhas are upadana khanda. So just one, the vinyana khanda, which sees or experiences, is not enough. What about the vedana, the feeling, and the sanya now, see? It's not been detected as no one, no self at all.
So Panya needs to know all of the khandhas.
Whatever appears. Otherwise, doubt is there. Ignorance is there. So it takes quite a long time not to have intention to just select the object of understanding. Like now, see, they're seeing and hearing and thinking. It depends on awareness itself. In order to really understand from the very beginning, no one there at all. All are dhammas. All are dhammas. Not just one or two.
So it's important to know, to start with, that there is, you often say, there's no one there. No one there.
Yeah.
So
intellectually, it's important to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And never change. Never change the thinking that there's no one there.
The understanding must be.
It never changes because each Dharma, each Kanda, is always no one there. So it never changes the reality itself, the nature of it.
The other day you were talking about all of the Kandas, Rupa Kanda, Vedana Kanda, it's Nimitta. You were talking about Nimitta of Kandas. I've heard Nimitta before, but it became a little clearer because I think I spoke with Jonathan about why don't we talk about the rapidity of things, like something will, for example, seeing arises, falls away. And I've got a bit stuck on that, but we talked a lot about rapidly the one moment of seeing conditions the next, or one visible object, or maybe I'm getting it mixed up. The arising and falling away happens really quickly, so it's the nimitta. That's why it's nimitta that is known first, rather than the actual reality, because it's gone so quickly.
Like now. Just like now.
When you say it's known first, actually, it's always the nimitta of reality that is known. As Ajahn mentioned the other day, even for the Buddha, it's the nimitta of reality which appears. It's always the nimitta of reality that appears first, second, third, any time.
So the Buddha, you were saying the Buddha only knew the nimitta of reality, but the Buddha knew the actual reality, didn't he? The actual moment of arising and falling. Otherwise, how do we know this stuff?
Before adverting consciousness, what's there?
Abhavangajita. But the Buddha knew all that.
And after that?
After the adverting?
After the Abhavangajita? Adverting consciousness.
Adverting consciousness.
Can Buddha know? The Panya can know that? They cannot be known because they follow each other. But his Panya is rapidly that he know better than the others.
Okay, right.
So he can say that after this, there's that, but not in between each one at all.
Well, there's no in between.
That's why, how can he know?
Right, yeah.
And that's why it's nimitta of
reality, because it has to be the whole process. So he could know, but it's still a nimitta of reality.
Very difficult.
Not
that I'm trying to know reality, but it's I hear it a lot, and then it seems to just get muddled in
and
my
how
thinking.
How can it be known?
Only by Panya it can be known.
Little by little.
Little by little.
Just one at a time. Gradually, one by one,
and that's,
little by little.
And that's why it's important to hear often.
Right.
I'm not sure that I'm clear on the question and the answers that just transpired. So Azita asked about how the Buddha could know these tiny fractions of a second of what followed what and what, and there was no space in between. Am I reflecting that back to you correctly, what the question? Because I'm trying to understand the question directly, so to process the answer.
Well, you need to know what if you're talking about no spaces in between, what do you mean by that?
Between the Bhavanga and the averting, one thing follows another.
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the question was, how could the Buddha know these respective moments?
I don't think it was a question. I think I was making a statement that the Buddha did know.
Mm-hmm.
because one has to also consider, for example, after the adverting consciousness, the seeing arises with seven chetasikas, not with panya. So at that moment, nothing is known about the adverting consciousness, only visible object is experienced, and one has to consider how that adverting consciousness could be known, for example. So it can't be known in the idle process because the object's visible object. So it has to be sign of adverting consciousness that is known in the mind or process only.
Yes, that's clear, because we keep saying it can only be panya that knows, and as you say, panya does not arise in that sensitive process.
It can arise in the sensitive process, but the object of the sensitive process is visible object. It can't be citta, for example. So how can it be known that it's after the bhavanga cittas, it's adverting consciousness and so on, not in that idle process?
That's very precise.
Because like Ajahn mentioned the other day, we're not talking about people who know, we're talking about the nature of cittas. So no matter we're talking about, in the case of the Buddha or you or me or anyone, it's the nature of cittas that panya can only arise at certain moments in the process, and it has to have the same object as the rest of that idle process, the same visible object, for example. Like a friend just wrote, I was just reading a message in the van that a friend wrote in the discussion list, and we were having a discussion about karma and if someone is deaf from birth and as a result of karma, and this seems so unfair to someone, and how can one say that someone is deaf because of karma and so on. But this is because we always think in terms of people and beings, but actually it's all about the Buddha's teachings, it's all about the nature of realities, not about people at all. So then we have to consider when panya can arise and what it can know from beginning level to advanced level.
So it all starts with wrong view, and from there people take the cannot separate self from reality as non-self. Things happen, they take it personally, so to speak, and manufacture stories or reasons to explain this when it's just going farther and farther away from the truth into darkness of ignorance, and sort of hypnotize themselves with these stories.
Well, that's right. And because of the strong clinging to the idea of self, there's strong clinging to other beings, other people, the Buddha, and so on. So if they hear something about karma bringing its results, such as deafness from first moment of life, then because they're thinking in terms of people, it seems unacceptable and they don't want to hear further. So it's only by beginning to consider and understand about different realities and how they're conditioned that gradually there is less clinging to the idea of self and more understanding develops. And this is why one has to hear and consider more and more details, because that idea of self is so deeply rooted.
What I see with this package called Eve, and also with others, and then I say, oh yes, me too, is this sort of taking the reality for self and observing something, and rather just reality is reality, somehow through the story or taking it personally, it's so unfair, judging it, it's good or bad, when it's just a reality. Brings on suffering. So it's created and it's just a reality.
For example, you gave an example in the van, if someone doesn't like one or something like this, but it's just thinking in one's own head, actually, because what is heard is sound, what is seen is what is visible object, and it's just an idea, a story in one's head about someone liking one or not liking or this or that.
actually, it always has to just come back to understanding reality, each reality which arises and falls away and isn't Eve or Sarah or anyone else.
Just getting back to no one there for a minute, is this in relation to realities or generally?
Realities only.
Realities only.
All are realities.
All are no one there.
Yeah. Otherwise it's impossible to eradicate the idea of self at all,
right,
if there is something there.
Right. But I'm just wondering about, because some people have the idea that thinking no one there is part of the development of understanding, but what you're talking about is...
But what about thinking then? Thinking must be a reality as well.
Yes. So it's realities.
Which
it's
things?
Only in relation to realities that one can say no one there.
It's the panya which knows more and more, better and better, and getting closer and closer to actually there's no one.
Closer and closer to actually no one.
Yeah, it has to be more understanding only, which will get closer to no one, because they are realities.
But it's the realities that are no one, that are non-self, that have the characteristic of non-self.
So the visible object is no one, so it's understanding which has to develop to understand that. So in the beginning, when it's a little bit of intellectual understanding, there is an idea that perhaps it's true that visible object is no one. So it's the understanding that develops that gets closer and closer to realizing it really is no one there at that moment.
It's panya which knows, otherwise it's the I who know.
Yes, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Only panya can know.
No one there.
And even panya does not last. See?
Yes.
Yeah. And not just panya, whatever in one's life. Like now, there are many realities, but nothing appears as Dhamma.
Mm.
It appears as different things and people.
So
until no thing and no people. Different realities only in a day.
And that understanding we're talking about, it's all about seeing the true nature of a reality that is appearing at the present moment.
And not just saying.
Not just saying.
Right.
Absolutely.
And ignorance brings up fear. No thing, no one. What will become of the self? But the self is non-existent in the first place. But ignorance is the thing that suggests, oh, well, no thing, no self, that's death. But that's not it either. Ignorance covers everything. Covers the truth, the reality.
So it's always worrying and fear about a fantasy. So like a fantasy of, oh, if there's no God, or if there's no me, or no... But actually, there never was, there never can be. Worrying about a dream.
I think my worries are more gross than that. It's just, I feel self-conscious all the time. Even as a child, I would be really feeling like everyone was looking at me. Even now, it's like when I go to do something, I'm often very uncomfortable. And I keep thinking, it's so much mana. And mana is there until arahat. So just get to know mana. But it's a reality. And I guess it's because I'm feeling uncomfortable a lot of the time. It's not pleasant feeling. So, because if it was pleasant feeling, I wouldn't worry. I'd be quite happy. But unpleasant feeling
no,
is unpleasant.
Unpleasant is
exactly.
You. Unpleasant.
It's me, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But it can be known because
yes.
They're realities.
Right understanding begins and develops gradually by itself.
And that's the key word, isn't it? Gradually,
right.
Little by little.
And understanding only.
Yes.
If one tries to do something, it's not understanding.
Yeah. Yes, it's very easy to write that and to say that, but for that to be a reality.
And to know that later.
To know that later.
Yeah, not at once at all. See, now, all reality is sankhara khanda develop from moment to moment. Who knows? Very gradually.
Actually, it's all about the importance of me, because when it's mana, it can't be with unpleasant feeling. It has to be with pleasant feeling or neutral feeling, because it's with attachment. So when it's unpleasant feeling, it's just the aversion to, yeah, but it's still conditioned by the clinging to me and my importance. Like when one feels grengjaya, it's still all about me.
Just back to
the topic of nimitta, which Asita brought up. So each conditioned dharma has nimitta. There's nimitta of every reality apart from nibbana. But what appears is not the nimitta of a reality, because, for example, countless visible objects are appearing over and over. So what appears is the sign of visible object, not one visible object. But if it is developed understanding, if it was the understanding of the Buddha, then it would be the nimitta of a reality. Is that correct? That would be the difference.
Each one has nimitta.
Each one has nimitta.
Like present feeling.
Yes.
Many, many moments. And it has its one correct, one nature.
Yes.
To be present.
But like
and
now,
Buddha knew much better and more subtle.
Yes, yeah. But like now, for example, if there's understanding of pleasant feeling, it's not just the nimitta of one, it's the nimitta of
many.
Countless pleasant feelings. Mm-hmm. So it's the nimitta of that characteristic
like
of pleasant
many
feeling.
People and many things, yes. So countless.
But for example, when we're talking about the great wisdom of the Buddha and the Panchadwara Vajana and the seeing consciousness and sampaticcana and so on, and then the nimitta of each reality could be known. So this is the difference.
Otherwise, not taught.
No, otherwise can't be known.
So as understanding develops, it gets
closer and closer to the to a reality. But in the beginning, it's the sign of many realities. And even at Vipassana Jnana, well, if it's the, for example, the understanding of the nimitta of the arising and falling away of reality, it's still the arising
nimitta.
And falling away of the nimitta of the reality. Mm-hmm. But in that case, the sign of one reality or many pleasant feelings,
one at a time,
must be one, otherwise it couldn't be the arising and falling away.
Mm-hmm. Nimitta of one.
Of one.
In that case, nimitta is still the sign. So what is the rising and falling that is the object of understanding there? The rise
even
and falling
the understanding
of nimitta.
Understanding is the sign.
Yes.
The sign.
Always the sign.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Who knows the sampaticcana santirana votapana, see?
You just meant sampaticcana, votapana, jhāvana, jitas. And in my head, yes, I know this process. The bhavanga jitas are interrupted by sense door pro. But it's still all just thinking about it.
Until?
Well, until paññā knows, directly knows
directly,
it.
Directly, one by one.
One by
but
one.
But not like sampaticcana, santirana, votapana
right.
At all.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, breath. We were talking about breath. So if breath is conditioned by jitta, and breath is a rupa, that rupa has to. So what is the breath rupa called? What is the rupa of breath called? Is it just called breath?
Do we have to call it?
Well, I'm trying to fit it in. if this breath. The rupa, it has to arise in a galapa.
certainly.
And it's a like, and remember the other day I talked about the vignettes. They are just what their
breath
condition.
Breath is not vignette.
No, breath isn't, no, but it's like it in that it, the vignettes arise just one.
In the galapa.
In the galapa, but it doesn't stay the length of the galapa. It arises because, and falls.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to...
But there are conditions again and again and again because citta has such condition for kaya vinyati or vajra vinyati.
Right.
As long as it's there.
And so breath is the same. Breath is...
No.
No, it's not like that. But it's breath is conditioned by citta. Mm-hmm. So...
What we know is breath is conditioned by citta.
So a kalapa that is conditioned by citta, for example, the simplest kalapa, 8 indivisible rupas conditioned by citta, we can call it breath. And one rupa may appear, such as hardness or motion, that may appear and may be experienced, may be known. But each of those rupas lasts for 17 cittas, that whole kalapa of rupas lasts for 17 cittas because it's not one of the exceptions. It's not kaya vinyati or vachi vinyati. For example, there can be breathing, like when one's sleeping, there's no bodily intonation, no verbal intonation, no intention to speak, no intention to wave one's hand around. But still, breath is being conditioned. Those rupas are being conditioned at each moment of at each citta while deep asleep. We can call that group breath if we want to give it a name. And actually, no rupa is appearing at that time. Now that group is being conditioned by citta, nothing to do with kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati. It's just a simple group of rupas. And it may be that hardness appears or motion appears, but if it does, it's just for an instant and then gone, not of any significance. But each of those rupas lasts for the equivalent of 17 cittas.
And breath is not one of the 28 rupas.
It's just a name, it's just a name. But it is reality because those rupas in that kalapa conditioned by citta, it is breath.
And those rupas in that kalapa,
we can say that is breath conditioned by citta. But what appears is softness or motion.
No, really?
Yeah. It's headache.
Yeah, no. Is breath one of the 28 rupas?
Well, I'm learning that it is.
No, not breath itself, but it's in it's a kalapa. It can
it's
be.
It's just formed. Like it's like one of the rupa of the 28. Hand, leg, ear, eye, the same.
Hand,
breath.
Oh, it's very confusing.
No, it has to be clear.
She's not going to let you opt out.
Oh, well. Well, hand is a concept that arises based on the experiencing of certain realities.
And breath?
Well, breath would have to be the same.
And ear?
The same.
Yeah. Talk?
The same.
No matter what you call it.
Perhaps it would be best for understanding this to break down breath. What happens? What is it? What conditions it?
Breath. What happens in breath? Because it's many, many moments there. Breath is a rupa, but I think sometimes people confuse it. With citta, it's conditioned by citta, but I know that there's temperature, there's hardness, there's motion, there's cohesion. There are many things going on with breath. So perhaps for understanding, it would be best, if I may suggest, just to break it down. Sarah, help?
Breath, like now, when we're talking about breath, like arm or head or finger, it's a concept referring to realities, but there have to be realities there, otherwise we couldn't talk about breath. So it's used to convey a meaning. And what it's referring to are particular realities, particular rupas that are conditioned by citta only. But many rupas are conditioned by citta, such as, for example, if one's happy or one blushes, there are different rupas that are affected. Not all rupas conditioned by citta are breath. So it's referring to particular rupas usually completely unknown that are conditioned by citta. That's all. These rupas are realities.
That's a very nice example of non-self.
That's a very good example of non-self. I like very much how it's simplified and broken down to breath is a rupa conditioned by citta, and that's all. Don't need to get lost in stories or concepts. Thank you.
So whenever there's the idea of breath appearing, it's a concept.
What do you mean?
Whenever there's the idea of breath.
Only idea of breath.
Idea of breath appearing, it's a concept. And it's a concept that is based on certain realities that are, in fact, arising at the moment. That reality or those realities can be known as they are. But there's not the knowing of breath as such.
And why there's doubt about breath?
Again?
Why there is doubt about breath?
I'm not sure if it was doubt. It was just that...
You asked about breath.
I did ask about
breath. So, do you have any doubt about it when you ask about breath?
We talked about it in Gangajan, and I didn't understand, but I'm understanding a bit more that it is so hard to know that when there's all these other realities. I mean, I can see that the explanation Sarah gave about breath being a rupa conditioned by citta is enough for me at the moment.
What about the other rupa, like arms? Yes.
Well, that arm is a concept.
An
arm
and breath,
is a concept too. Yes. But there are realities. There are realities, because if there was no realities, there'd be no arm. Or if there were no realities, there'd
no
be
breath.
No breath.
Mm-hmm. So.
So. Yes.
Common.
Yes. Commonly unknown.
Yeah. Like others.
Like all the others, yes.
At the moment, we spread this talk around about anapanasati that you talked about last week, and many people have commented that you misunderstood everything.
It doesn't matter what they think,
yes.
but it's a truth.
Right.
About what?
Oh, well, because Ajahn were talking about anapanasati.
What is it?
Anapanasati, yes. So she explained the whole thing, and then so we put the clip on Facebook or on YouTube, and many others was really thinking that Ajahn...
Ask them what's wrong.
Yes. So I repost again. I said, if you study carefully in Tipitaka...
Just what's wrong. Let them say what's
right.
wrong.
Well, anapanasati, a lot of people only know the anapanasati of samatha. So
even samatha is not known. They just want to concentrate or get something.
I don't mean they know it correctly. I mean they've only
heard about.
The anapanasati of samatha.
And they think
they only think about it in that context.
Right.
One, because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 heads are better than one. So, for example, breath is a rupa conditioned by citta. Good. Ear, hand, this concept, or this thing, is conditioned by citta. This item here is conditioned by citta, among other things, many other things.
We can't say that. What we can say is there are groups of rupa conditioned by citta. So there are groups of rupa that we give a name to, such as arm or head or whatever. But actually, there are countless groups of rupa that are conditioned by a condition, not by conditioned by different conditions. Otherwise, there couldn't be that idea of arm or head or finger. And it's the same with breath. There are countless groups of rupas conditioned by citta. That's what breath is. So breath is just a name, a panyati, to convey the meaning of particular rupas, but it's pointing to particular rupas. So it's not actually just one rupa, but it's a group of rupas conditioned by citta. But only one reality can appear at a time. If softness is appearing, motion can't appear. So this group of rupas conditioned by citta that we can refer to as breath is actually conditioned throughout life at almost every moment.
All right. Now, for example, I sense visible object impinges on I sense, and the I see visible object looking at something green. What is seen is conditioned by citta, but it's also conditioned by kamma. For example, is it green? Is it beautiful? Is it putrid? Is it ugly? Or so forth. So, are all rupa conditioned by citta?
No.
I didn't think so.
Can be conditioned by citta, temperature, karma, or nutriment. If it's the visible object out here that is seen, it's only conditioned by temperature. It can't be conditioned by citta or karma or nutriment. And the visible object in the body is conditioned by temperature, nutriment, or citta.
All right.
Because the groups of rupa conditioned by karma are very specific. You mentioned eye sense. Eye sense is conditioned by karma always. So we have to be very specific about different groups of rupas. So if we're talking about the group of rupas that we call breath, this has to be conditioned by citta only. So different rupas are conditioned in different ways.
So it's not object conditioned by citta. The thought is conditioned by karma, citta. Good, bad, ugly, I like, I don't like.
We've got lots of things mixed up together.
Yeah. a whole potpourri of different realities. So we have to be clear. That's why Ajahn always says, let's talk about one thing at a time, one word at a time, otherwise it's all mixed up. So it's very important. So citta arises at each moment during life. So at a moment of seeing, it's citta. A moment of hearing, it's citta. Moments of thinking, it's citta. And when citta arises, it conditions groups of rupas. So some groups of rupas are conditioned by citta, but other groups of rupa are conditioned by these other causes. So if we're talking about a group of rupas conditioned by citta, such as when one blushes, or breath, for example, then we're talking about rupas. So not to be mixed up with citta, because we're talking about those rupas that cannot experience anything, nothing to do with cittas, which think. So we have to be clear whether we're talking about rupas or we're talking about cittas. Otherwise it gets mixed up.
Yes. So thank you for breaking that down and making the space between a mixed up jumble of rupa and citta.
And in terms of other people, and for example, you put something on Facebook and people disagree and they don't like it, and it's the same on our discussion list, it's the same anywhere. It doesn't matter at all, because unless one really studies very carefully the details and the nature of different realities arising by their particular conditions, each one not self, there will always be wrong ideas about I can focus, or I can have the practice, or I can get this result, or this is a way to be calm. So it will always be like that. And we know that there will only ever be very few people who are really interested to study and consider and understand about Dharma. So we don't have any expectations that everyone will like it or appreciate it. Of course, most people will disagree. That's the way of the world. Like the Buddha said, actually, it's the world that I don't disagree with the world. The world disagrees with me. And even for the Buddha, most people can't accept or like it. So it doesn't matter at all. We just see the value in developing understanding, share as we can, and never mind about the results, or no use in having any expectations. Otherwise, it's just more clinging.
Just the feedback from the group of people in Chiang Mai, because when I post this, then people in the Dharma study group in Chiang Mai, they said that, oh, there's some feedback like this, PL. So like, we shared around. They shared around. Khun Jack shared around in different group and said, Khun Jack in Chiang Mai, ha. Huh? No. It's one of the guys in Chiang Mai. So he put it around in all the group and said that please help support Ajahn by sharing more and press like.
I think the way to support is to really study and understand the Buddha's teachings and then share as appropriate.
I think they also made a comment as well in there. So like, different people, because a different group of, you know, even study Dharma together, we have different groups of people, and so they all will help make comment, you know, the right one. In other words, like, we are having a conversation, the right conversation, what is right and what is not right. So it's not bad, you know. I'll say that it's good feedback.
It's like now talking about breath, we can see this is not a easy topic at all. So even some people who say they agree and they like it, but do they actually understand what breath is at all?
Yeah, there'll be a few people who really understand. So we discuss, you know, what and not, and what is right, what is not right, stuff. So it's benefit. It's good.
Sometimes during the day, you know, it might be walking around to do something, and it sometimes occurs to me, now what would Ajahn do in this situation? and I have no idea, because it's helpful in a way. It maybe makes
actually,
me feel
there's no Ajahn.
No Ajahn. Well, yes, yeah. And also I don't know what you would do in those situations, but it's comforting to think about you.
See, hearing,
clinging,
clinging,
clinging.
Yeah.
Like people might think they want to be like Ajahn or try to copy the way. Actually, it's clinging. Even that can be known at that time.
Clinging. After 3 moments, after seeing, hearing.
On this point about breath and how it's conditioned at every moment in life, apart from seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and a few others.
And what are the few others?
Okay, so this was the topic we brought up more about on the Saturday before last, about how in the text it gives 16 cittas which cannot condition breath, so the 10 moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, because there's kusala and akusala vipaka, that's 10. The first moment of life, the patisandhi citta, the last moment of life of the arahat, the chuti citta, and then the 4 arupa results, pala cittas, 16. But what I mentioned was actually in other texts, like in suttas, we were discussing how it's often said in the 4th jhana there's no breath. So we were considering what is meant
does this refer to just the citta before Nirodha Samapatti, where there's no consciousness? Actually, it's not clear exactly what is meant, because it's like an extra citta. And then Ajahn discussed it further with some of the other students in the Thai session, and like in the Visuddhimagga, it actually also says that, like someone, like in a fetus in the mother's womb, no breath, it mentions this. And you mentioned, like when one dives under the water, in this translation it has drowning, which is a bit different. But
it depends, because you see that we can talk about the major and the minor
ones.
Like Vinaya is exactly the same. The major are these, and the minor more.
And then some extra ones. Yeah. So that would be, if it's a 16, like if the rupa results are major, then if it mentions it in the suttas in the fourth jhana and it's minor, then it must be just one citta or something.
Because the main is these 16 moments cannot have breath at all. But what about the other situation from
yes.
this? That's
mm. Like when one's underwater. For example, like this morning in the swimming pool, when we swim under the water and aren't breathing. So I think my translation mentioned someone who drowned, and Ajahn's mentioned diving, so I think it's a translation thing. But when one's underwater,
look at the Bali, but I think that it's the same. Yes. Because we just talk about the major ones, and the details are more than that.
Extra details, like in the wound.
Someone mentioned unconscious.
And then in our translation,
it mentioned, in some suttas it says, oh no, in the Visuddhimagga, those who, where do these in-breaths and out-breaths exist? In whom do they not? They do not exist in those attained to the fourth jhana or in unconscious people. But again, we'd have to look at the Pali, because unconscious people, because if one's not conscious.
And I think that when it talks about the extra, no, so many details, no need to follow.
Well, only that
the mention of the fourth jhana is slightly puzzling, isn't it?
And it's very common mention.
Yeah.
It's mentioned
in a lot of suttas.
Somewhere else, like in the Vinaya, together are 227, but in sutta more. And yeah. We cannot follow each word or each situation. Just when this, we see that, we know that that is extra.
Arupa.
So
no rupa. No rupa. All right.
The opposite of rupa, like in the arupa realm, no rupas, only cheetahs arise and fall away. So not even any heart base, because of the development of arupa jhana, really seeing the danger of rupas, which are just objects of attachment. So this is the realm where those who are born who have experienced the arupa jhana.
Pala.
Pala
is fruition or
result. So arupa pala citta. So pala is the result of arupa jhana, just like at moments of enlightenment, the pala citta is the result or the fruit of the magga, the path citta. I have a question about the paramis, and when you refer to sub-paramis. A friend gave a quote the other day, and it may be related. This is about 30 paramis, when the paramis are divided into 10 basic paramis, 10 intermediate paramis, upa-parami, and 10 ultimate paramis, paramata, parami. And it says in the commentary that some teachers say that the 10 basic paramis are the intermingled bright and dark qualities practiced by a bodhisattva
who has just formed his inspiration, whose end is the welfare of others, and whose means are directed towards working for this end. The intermediate paramis are the bright qualities, untainted by any darkness, and the ultimate paramis are the qualities which are neither dark nor bright. Are you familiar with this?
I think that when we talk about the three grades or degrees, yes, that it's all about parami.
It's all about parami.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if when you refer to...
Like now, it's parami,
yes,
but not the ultimate one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering when you refer to sub-paramis, are you referring to these basic paramis,
basic,
the same?
Yeah.
Yes, same one. So, and then the...
Because like now, see?
Yes.
If it's not parami, what is it? And how can there be higher?
Yes. And if it is parami now with understanding, then it's intermediate parami, but not yet ultimate paramis.
Greater.
Which is at enlightenment moment.
Oh, no. It depends on how hard it is to such level of parami, to be able to have such parami, like giving away one's children or things like that, see?
Okay.
Not just money or little things.
Could you read the basic one again?
So the 10 basic paramis, because I wondered, I was interested, because we've often talked about sub-paramis, but I never come across it in a text
because
until this. And then, and it says the 10 basic paramis are intermingled bright and dark qualities practiced by a bodhisattva who has just formed his aspiration, whose end is the welfare of others and whose means are directed towards working for this end.
And how do you understand that?
Well, this is a question. Because when it's sub-parami and it's just supporting the development of understanding.
That's it. That's so, what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, and so, it is what basic parami is. It depends on words, what can help you to understand.
What it helps. And, of course, there's bound to be kusala and akusala
moments.
Because
even now, if you talk about the basic parami, it seems like we have reached some level.
Yes.
But actually, any moment
it's developing
of goodness,
any goodness that can support the development of
because
understanding
of mind,
and develop the other qualities, and it's leading towards the end, of samsara.
Yeah.
But when it says it's...
So no matter what you call that?
Yes.
What do you call that?
Pre-paramis, perhaps. Yes.
Pre-paramis.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
or
good.
Or basic paramis, pre-paramis, I think, yes. Because it's
is
the
it
development of...
It seems like pre-parami is not parami.
Yes.
Because it's pre.
Yes. Or basic level, okay, basic level.
Paramis.
Do you understand now that now it's basic parami?
Mm.
Understanding dhammas, even if not understanding arising at this particular moment, but the subject matter is the understanding of realities.
So what is the basic parami?
Any kusala arising in connection with the development of understanding, which describes the present moment, I think.
So now it's basic parami.
Mm. It's some level of parami. But I was interested in the reference to bodhisattva in the basic, because I think you've said also that...
In his many lives as this or that person and have such understanding of that situation.
Yes.
Enough to do right things.
But I think you've said there are different kinds of bodhisattva.
Different kinds
of
different...
Savaka Bodhisattva.
Yes.
Yes, so when it's like now, Savaka Bodhisattva, because it's like the follower of...
Is that right?
The same parami.
It's a reference to Savaka Bodhisattva.
And it depends on what level of parami is there, how much you can do that.
And if it was just, for example, if there was a lot of generosity now, but not having heard the teaching and not supporting any understanding, then it couldn't be basic paramis, because someone may perform great generosity throughout life, but it's not leading to the development of the paramis at all. So there has to be understanding interspersed, even just intellectual understanding, otherwise it cannot be basic paramis, those moments of generosity.
And can the Savaka have great Parami as Sammasambuddha? That's all.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject of Parami, would you please just state the 10 Parami?
Okay, but just before we get to that, so here I think, because a lot often the references in the text, like in the Charya Pitaka or the sub-commentaries, it's referring to the Sammasambuddha as Bodhisatta, but actually, I guess for any Bodhisatta, it's the same. So even for Savaka Bodhisatta, the qualities won't be so great, but the development is the same.
Okay, without Parami, can there be better and better understanding? See? So very natural life, yeah.
And the intermingled bright and dark qualities practiced by the Bodhisatta. How do you understand this? No, just
Upa Parami and Mahaparami, that's all, different yeah. levels.
Yes. I wondered if it was a bit like the suttas which talk about bright and dark karma or something like this.
Maybe when it's strong, it's bright. When it's not as strong, it's dark. Something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Strange. You haven't heard this reference. No, it's quite strange.
From where?
I don't know. It's from a commentary, but I'm not sure which one.
Can you read that reference again? Bright and dark what?
Some teachers say that the 10 basic paramis are the intermingled bright and dark qualities practiced by a bodhisatta who has just formed his aspiration. Bright and dark. We don't know. And then it says the intermediate paramis are the bright qualities untainted by any darkness. So perhaps it just means stronger.
Ignoring the word practiced for a moment, bright and dark qualities could just be a reference to wholesome and unwholesome mental states, because in the beginning there are so many unwholesome mental states intermingled, and the wholesome mental states are relatively few and are intermingled with the unwholesome ones. But the unwholesome ones are not practiced, which is why I made that comment that they depends on the translation, but they are arising.
Well, that was what I understood. But then and the moments, for example, when making an offering, and there is a lot of akusala in between the moments of kusala, but then they wouldn't be referred to as paramis. So when it says,
why can't?
Can they? Like when making a gift, giving a gift, if there's more kusala than akusala, we talk about giving as support or basic
so
parami.
So giving is a parami, but it's not as bright because there are
because it's
akusala.
Tinged by akusala, okay. And the intermediate ones are the bright qualities untainted by any darkness. So when it's pure
akusala.
Giving, then it's not tainted or affected by the akusala. And the ultimate paramis are the qualities that are neither dark nor bright. Why are they neither dark nor bright, the paramatta?
It is not so dark and it's not so bright.
I thought perhaps it was talking about the qualities of the arahat, whether it's not kusala or akusala, it's just kriya.
Beyond parami, when that person has become an
arahat. So it's not that. So when it talks about the ultimate paramis that are qualities that are neither dark nor bright, then
not too bright, not too dark.
Could that possibly be the unconditioned reality of the arahat, and that way there isn't not a kusala, but a regular person, just a normal person, learning this and leaning toward understanding, it's either a moment of kusala or akusala. It cannot be parami if there's a kusala, but even in the act of giving there are moments of akusala. Recognize that. But I was the question itself is confusing, because a parami, that's a mixture of bright and dark. It sounds like normal people giving, but there's also akusala moments. whereas when it's highly developed, akusala is not there.
The point is that
this is why it's basic, because it's tainted. The kusala is not so great, because in between the moments of kusala, akusala arises. When it's purer and more developed, it's not tainted, it's not affected by akusala rising in between. Like one's just giving, no expectation of a result, no concern about what anyone thinks or if anyone objects at all. So it's purer. And then, but the ultimate ones, Ajahn said it couldn't be referring to the arahat because he's beyond the development of the paramis.
So it's not parami?
Not parami then.
Yeah. But when we talk about situation in different lives, sometimes it's clear to be parami and sometimes not clear. It can be bright or dark.
When there's an act of, say, giving or any kind of kusala, looking at the overall act or deed, which is obviously conceptual view, but anyway, for us it's bound to be a mixture of light and dark. But for the person of much more highly developed understanding, it'll be much purer and it'll be more light than dark. Or it could be all light.
Like when he was born a crocodile, see, even such thinking in wise way can be considered as dark parami, not like human being. And yeah, it depends, who knows.
Born as a crocodile?
Yes. Some lives.
Or an insect.
Talking about the Buddha, the Bodhisattva, and his lives, or in the Jatakas, or the
monkey.
Monkey, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Elephant, snake, serpent.
Serpent king.
Even serpent has king. Dark.
So which paramis would you
like to hear about? Like Dana parami, Sila.
Would you kindly state the 10 parami and then see what goes from
okay.
there?
Okay. So Dana parami, Sila parami.
What are they? Dana parami.
Generosity.
Dana is generosity, sila, morality, metta, love.
I think Ajahn wants to know what kind
of generosity, what kind of morality, what is the generosity? Because generosity is so common. One goes into the street and people are giving things away, and morality. So what is it about generosity that makes it dana parami? What is it about sila that makes it sila parami?
My experience of giving. Let's say the other day when I left the center Saturday, and then it was raining, and a nudge, and there was a woman standing, and so I took my umbrella and held it over both our heads, and the bus came, and I was delighted that she paid my fare. I wasn't expecting anything, but that could be considered a form of dana, of giving.
A form of dana, but
not dana parami.
No, not dana parami.
Because
it's tainted.
Can we say dark?
Dark. It's dark.
Because if it's not conditioned by any understanding, or if there's been no hearing of the teachings, no wise considering of the teachings, that dana, the offering, the umbrella, doesn't lead to the way out of samsara. So it cannot be basic parami. If there's some understanding, those qualities, those accumulations of dana can be a support for understanding to develop, then they can be basic paramis. But if someone is just generous by nature, but without any understanding, without any knowing anything about dharma as anatta, then it's not yet.
And can we say that is pre-parami?
It's not actually any kind of parami, but it allows the development of parami, because if there's no accumulation to give, then the parami of dana would not arise.
But if, for example,
like in the case of that lady, there are good qualities and accumulations, but never having heard anything about the teachings,
and that's right, it's not parami
at all yet. But then I would say, if it's pre, is it what is meant here by basic parami? I don't think so yet.
When we think about stages or level, yeah, we can say the lowest one is basic.
So this is why I'm wondering whether the basic is the same as the pre, because if it's
pre
is before basic, yeah, because pre means not any understanding yet, but for basic there has to be understanding. So when we talk about sub paramis or pre paramis, not yet basic, but sub.
Sub is basic.
Okay. Sub is basic, not pre.
So pre is before sub.
I don't know English enough to know whether it should be this or that. So should it be sub or basic?
I think pre.
And then basic is clear. So pre means before it is any level of paramis. And then basic is like when there has been some understanding and the kusala, like the dana, is being developed, like now, but conditioned by understanding and conditioning understanding, supporting understanding.
And this is if basic. There is the word sub-parami, what does it mean?
It's a little bit confusing in English
because it sounds like it's under-parami, yes. Like we can talk about a subset, but it's a little bit confusing for us. So I think pre and basic is better because sub means underneath. Like people talk about subconsciousness, like kusala, na kusala, that subconscious unknown, but it's actually not correct in Dhamma because anusyas are not subconscious, and subtle defilements like asavas are not subconscious. So sub is a little bit of a...
Cannot be known, sub, because it's under, or what?
I think that the... But still, under is a little bit...
Like mood, dark. I don't know.
For example, people talk about...
Like when we watch an advertisement on TV and we think that we're not affected at all, but we say, oh, subconsciously it has an effect. Next time you go to the shop and you see that brand of soap, you reach for it because actually... The attachment and the thinking is there, unknown, when you watch the advertisement. So people say this is subconscious, and in Western psychology we talk about subconscious ideas. But from the Dharma point of view, nothing is subconscious. It just means the attachment is unknown.
Can it be more delicate than the basic? Because it's unknown, developed.
The parami more delicate, in between pre and basic.
Before pre and before basic.
Pre.
Pre-primary parami.
I think it's because clear if we just talk about...
Do we know now that they are parami? See, we don't know, but it's there. So it's pre or sub, we don't know.
I think this is the pre-paramis, like in the lady's case with the holding the offer, the helping with the umbrella. She doesn't know anything about paramis, but actually that kusala is there.
But what about some life of the Buddha to be called parami, even in the animal life, see? Because at that moment, no understanding about whether this is parami or not yet.
It's a very subtle point, but in that case we know that those kusala qualities, even being accumulated as a snake king or something, we know it has been conditioned by understanding before and by aspirations and so on. So they are the qualities that are being accumulated and developed because of previous understanding, even though that understanding is unknown in that life. So in that case, actually it's like
pre-parami.
Or pre-parami or basic parami, because it's being accumulated. And we don't know, like, even...
So now, it's pre or basic?
Basic. Basic, because there's been some understanding that understands the value
but
of...
But if you don't know that it is basic, parami...
Yes, then maybe back to pre.
Unseen, like they can be unknown, unseen in that respect. Yeah. Sometimes we use the term emergent to describe a very subtle, weak quality of some kind that isn't apparent.
Well, someone who is really very generous but's never heard, well, in this life has not heard Buddha's words, but is a very generous person. Would you call that a parami, or just... Because parami means that it develops along with understanding of realities. So if a person's not heard about realities, not heard any of the Buddha's words, but is still a very generous person, is that classed as a pre-parami or no parami?
Pre-parami.
I think that it is asiya. Because there are two words,
asiya, yes.
And anusiya.
Anusiya, asiya.
Yeah, asiya. Because for the Islam,
yes,
they might be very kind,
mm,
but they believe in other things.
Yes.
Christian. Situation you were describing, you said a person who hasn't heard...
Haven't heard the teachings.
In this lifetime or ever?
Well, I'm just going by this lifetime.
So may have developed understanding in previous lifetimes?
What about the person who has wrong belief but is very generous?
Yeah. Mm.
So that generosity cannot be parami or pre-parami.
Mm. But
asiya.
So, what would giving with understanding be like?
So, like now, because one's heard a lot about the teachings, so one appreciates the value or the importance of giving, like giving away just material things, or giving away the wrong idea of self, or best giving of all, sharing the teachings. This is the greatest kind of dana, and it's because of understanding there is the appreciating the value and understanding the benefit of the development of generosity of all kinds. Because if one can't give away some little things, how can one give away the wrong view, and how can one share what is most precious? So then it is basic parami, because actually, it's conditioned by understanding. They condition each other. So understanding cannot develop without the development of the other paramis. So there has to be the development of giving along with understanding, just like there has to be the development of abstaining from harmful deeds, harmful speech, development of respect, development of all kinds of kusala, which is morality, and there has to be the relinquishment of all that's akusala, the nekama parami, the truthfulness, to understand this moment, and metta, being kind to others. It has to develop with panya, with understanding, which understands the value. Otherwise, how can one know when there is metta and when there isn't, if there's no
understanding. One may take it that every time one's kind and friendly to one's children or the dogs in the street, that it's metta. Mm-hmm. But it's only understanding that can know what is true metta, different from attachment. So we can see that all these qualities develop with understanding and support understanding.
And can it be known what level of parami is there? Like now.
Panya is not there yet, Sajan.
So then one can know
that it's not that level.
So what level is there?
Like one knows now when one does something good or is generous or shares the Dharma, there must be akusala moments in between. So then we could say it has to be just basic.
But when one usually doesn't have such moment of kusala before, and by having understanding, it conditioned moment of doing something, well, before one cannot do that at all. See? It begins to see it. Can.
How it develops.
Yeah.
But it's still basic.
We cannot say whether what level it is.
Or we don't have to say anyway. Yeah. It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
But we can see that actually it's kusala, that's understanding that leads to all kinds of kusala.
Because often these descriptions of different levels are not said in order that we should think about whether it's this level or that level, but just by way of explaining that there's beginning level and weak, and then it gets stronger and more developed.
Perhaps a concern about what level is self.
Usually, for example, if one's giving or showing kindness, there's no thought about is it parami or what is, no issue about that at all. Just because Ajahn had often mentioned this word subparami, and I came across this, so it was
so interesting. Now we better use the word pre.
Pre is better, I think, yes.
Yes.
Have all of the Buddha's words been recorded in writing? Everything the Buddha said is in the Dipitaka.
Yeah, and commentaries too.
What's your question? Did he say anything?
That's what I was.
In terms of his teaching, you mean, or in terms of his daily life?
No, not daily life. Teaching.
So everything that is needed to be known
was recorded. Is recorded.
Is recorded. Well, how would you know if there was something that
missing?
Wasn't?
That's a good question. Don't know how I would know, or anyone actually.
I suppose you could know if there were references in what we have to some other text or words spoken by the Buddha that we don't find recorded, and that does happen a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the Visuddhimagga, for example, there are a number of quotes, and not all of them can be attributed to
the Buddha,
to somewhere in the suttas. But
okay.
I think by and large, in terms of the gist, the meaning of what he said, it's all there. All the elements of his teaching are there.
I have a question about karma paccaya. For example, we know the two kinds of karma paccaya, the sahajata karma paccaya, which refers to how chetana, which arises at each moment in life, conditions the associated citta and citta seekers by coordinating them. This is the function of chetana, intention at each moment of life. And the second one, the nanakanaka kamapachya, by which chetana, which arises with kusala or akusala cittas, if it's of sufficient strength, can lead to deeds and actions which bring results later at another time. Nana Kanaka means another time. And the other day someone was asking a question about the cittas that arise in the jhavana process before death. And we were talking about how they are conditioned by karma paccaya, karma that accumulates.
So it seemed like the way we were just talking about the accumulation of karma. So it is the accumulation of karma by natural decisive support condition, pakatu upanisya pachya, which conditions those kusala or akusala cheetahs. But this sounds more like by pakatu upanisya pachya, because it's not sahajata karma pachya and it's not nana kanika karma pachya.
Why is it not? Oh, because it conditioned the citta.
Because it conditions the akusala, which is accumulated.
So
actually, when we say it's karma pachya, actually it's paktu upanisya pachya at that moment. It's the karma which is conditioned by paktu upanisya pachya. No.
It has to be karma, no matter it is sahachata or nanakani karma. When we talk about karma, it has to be that chetasika.
Yes.
But when we talk about pakatupa, anything.
Yes. It was just a way of considering that I found helpful. We're just actually talking at that moment about the karma that is accumulated by pakatu upanisya pachya, like we could talk about the Vedana accumulated or any other reality accumulated by pakatu upanisya pachya.
Or instead of saying by pakatupa, the way it is, it's accumulation,
yes,
whatever.
At that moment, yes. Okay, so actually we're talking about karma, but we're not talking about karma pachya at that moment. We're talking about the karma that is accumulated
by
at that moment.
By way of pakatu upanisya pachya.
By way of pakatu upanisya pachya. And whilst on the topic of pakatu upanisya pachya, I mean, we often talk about how anything can be the pachya, citta, chetasika, rupas, and then we have the examples of climate, people, and so on. Well, we know that when talking about climate or people, it's a bit like talking about arm or breath. It's just a kind of shorthand or a panyati conveying the meaning of certain realities, like now the temperature experience can be a condition for cheetahs and cheetah seekers and so on. So if it just refers to different realities conveyed by these terms like climate or food, then why does it mention in texts like the Abhidhammata Sangaha that concept or reality can be conditioned in this way, because actually it's just referring to realities?
Because you see that even the memory sanya of concept is not only concept.
It has to be the memory of it, or the thinking about it. Yes, otherwise it couldn't be conditioned. It's a bit like when we talk about metta to a person, it has to be the citta with metta, with thinking about that object. So there has to be the memory. Yes. Okay. Did you understand the question or the answer?
Some. Chetana is the citta that is sort of the organizer or coordinates.
Chetana cannot be citta.
Mental factor, yes, thank you. Chetana chetasika is the organizer, so to speak, the one that coordinates following citta. Okay.
Thank you. So now at each moment of life, even at the moment of seeing or the moment of hearing or moment of kusala or moment of akusala, Chetana is like the head prefect or the head girl, head boy, that coordinates the other chetasikas and the citta so that each one can perform its function. So chetana is actually translated as intention, but at moments of seeing or hearing, it's not intending anything, it's coordinating. But the reason it's given this term is because at moments of kusala or akusala, it, as well as coordinating, it actually intends for them to, the others, to perform in a kusala or akusala way, and it is that intention which is karma that can bring results later. actually any chetan at any moment in life is karma. So there's karma at each moment in life, but it cannot be karma that brings results except at moments of kusala or akusala karma, when it is strong enough to be karmapata that can bring results.
So chedana, because intention can be a bit misleading, to the self doesn't see, there is no intention, I will see, kind of a thing. That's all self, and that's wrong. But incorrect, rather. But the chedana, that this function will be performed, that is much. Thank you for clarifying that.
And the point being discussed was that at any moment when kusala or akusala chittas arise, they accumulate. Like if lobha arises now, it arises because there has been the habit in the past, the tendency in the past has been accumulated. That's why lobha arises now. We think lobha arises now because of a particular object seen, but actually the main cause of lobha arising now is the habit, the tendency. So it accumulates when it arises. The reason that we listen to the teachings and consider and discuss and ask questions is because panya accumulates when it arises. The habit becomes firmer or stronger, the understanding of a particular object. We hear a lot about visible object, so that panya accumulates to understand that object, that reality. And now we were just talking about karma. Karma is chetana, so when it arises with kusala or akusala, it also accumulates, so that willing in a wholesome or unwholesome way also accumulates. And this is what leads to giving or killing, for example. It's not just because of one momentary intention, it's because of that accumulation of chetana or karma that becomes strong enough to perform such a deed.
You said something interesting about willing in a wholesome or unwholesome way, because I've heard people debate among themselves in conversations, if we have will, if we can intend or will to do anything. And some people say no. So it's just natural, and you just do, just sort of bouncing around, flotsam and jetsam. And that is wrong view. It's error.
Because whatever topic we're talking about, whatever the subject, there's never any we to do anything, to will or not will, to do or not do, to flotsam or not flotsam. there's nothing that anyone can do, because there's no one. It's that fantasy again. So we're just talking about the nature of particular dharmas. So the nature of chetana when it arises with kusala or akusala is to intend or will in a wholesome or unwholesome way. Nothing to do with self, because no self involved at all.
Kusala conditions chedana, and then
something wholesome?
So at a moment of kusala, when the chitta is kusala, all the chetta seekers that arise with it are kusala, and they all condition each other by sahajata, pachya, and other conditions. That means they associate together in a wholesome way. The chitta itself is not wholesome or unwholesome, but when it arises with kusala chetta seekers, it becomes wholesome because they condition it. So the wholesome chetana coordinates and wills the other chetta seekers and the chitta in a wholesome way. The wholesome energy energizes them in a wholesome way. The wholesome generosity conditions them. So they all condition each other. They arise together, fall away together, experience the same object. So it's not a matter of one first and then another.
Think in terms of the group.
The cluster.
You mean the citta and its jhana seekers?
Mm-hmm.
Often
we use citta to refer to the group, the cluster, if you like, citta and its accompanying jhana seekers. It's quite common, but in terms of classification of realities, they are separate. According to the Abhidhamma classification, there are citta, jhana-seeka, rupa, nibbana as the four kinds of reality.
Kusala comes together. Accumulate.
Past kusala conditions kusala to arise, just like past accumulated akusala conditions akusala moments to arise. So it's the accumulated tendencies that condition wholesome or unwholesome mental states at the present moment.
So, for example?
Dana performed in the past, accumulated tendency to dana, conditions dana in the present.
I think you're mixing up two things.
So one thing is the fact that these wholesome or unwholesome tendencies accumulate, condition each other to arise in future. The dana in the past conditions the dana to arise now. And the second thing is that each citta arises with the associated chetasikas. It cannot arise alone. Mm-hmm. Like the king cannot appear without the retinue. So the citta has to arise with the other chetasikas. So when we talk about the king, to give the example from the text, it's implying that the retinue is there. When we talk about citta, it's implied that the citta seekers are there because it cannot arise alone. So they arise and fall away together.
Citta cannot arise without citta seekers, and citta seekers cannot arise without citta. So they're mutually dependent.
Come back to that arupa jhana realm. So there's only citta. So it must be a jitta that's got more than seven jhana-seekers. So the object of jitta has to be something. Is it the same while there's existence in arupa jhana realm? Is the object of that jitta the same all the way through that existence?
It could be thinking.
Any of the sense door objects, though, because no sense base.
But it can be thinking about past experiences, or there can be thinking like in a dream, but no dreaming, no sense objects experience. But there can be thinking, there can be attachment to being, there can be thinking about different kinds of jitas. If one has heard the Buddha's teachings or become enlightened beforehand, there can be thinking about dharmas even.
Anything else about the object? I know what's also interesting. There's also
a realm, the asanya realm, where there is no citta at all, because they have seen the danger of cheetahs. And in this realm, so the last moment of life, say as a human, actually conditions the first moment of life after that asanya realm, which can last for aeons. And I remember reading that the posture someone is in when they die, for example, standing on one leg, the moment of chuti-chitta, because the only rupas that are conditioned in the realm is the group with jivitindriya, so there cannot be any changing posture or anything.
One leg.
But no change, so the posture is just fixed for that whole life in the asanya realm, yeah. Only the group with jivitindriya, but not
one. The other leg?
So eons in standing on one leg.
Just no pain.
No pain, no problem. Right, so just stay in the same, exactly, because there's no vikara rupas, so no changing or no movement of the body at all, so just rupas conditioned by karma and until the next life.
So anything but no being.
Just different realities, different namas, different rupas conditioned in different ways.
We have to look up the vikara rupa because it can be conditioned by uttu.
What I read was that
there are only the karma. Group with jivitindriya conditioned by karma, only that group, but in that group with jivitindriya conditioned by karma,
because can there be at the moment of birth and then later.
Oh, so you mean that only applies
at birth, only the group with jivitindriya, but later in life there can be other groups with
the uttu of that kalapa
and
condition
right.
The arising and falling away.
Just like in this realm or any realm.
Just like this.
Right. So, for example, even in this life, the uttu, which is conditioned with the groups of rupa at the first moment of the arising of citta in this life, that uttu conditions other groups of rupas conditioned by uttu just at any moment of its arising.
So look at that again.
Look at that detail, because maybe it was just referring to the first moment of birth. So
otherwise there can be no difference between the rupa which is not conditioned by karma, but that it's a rupa which is conditioned by karma. Still with uttu, so this is only uttu. That's why they are different. The rupa of asanyata satta cannot be just like this. And that which makes difference is that uttu, which conditioned the other group.
Just like.
Well, in the case of a corpse and the uttu, in those last groups conditions uttu in other groups afterwards.
Mm-hmm. But no more kamacharupa to condition.
Exactly.
Uttu.
Just uttu.
Mm-hmm. Because this was a translation of a
commentary note about how there cannot be any change of posture, but maybe it was not clear
not
whether
by citta, but by uttu.
Uttu.
Yeah. To make difference between the rupa which is not conditioned by kamma
and the one conditioned. Mm-hmm.
What realm is that again you're talking about?
This is the asanya
realm, the realm where no asanya, no perception. It means actually there's no citta arising.
Right.
And this is because of, for those who have seen the danger of all kinds of cittas, because any citta is dukkha. And so it's because of a stage of arupa jhana that conditions such result, but and the life is very, very long, but afterwards there has to be life again with citta.
And I was going to ask Ajahn about the use of sanya to refer to perception or citta. Is this just something that we see from time to time, that sanya means perception or experiencing, which is a function of citta, but is it a particular function of sanya?
If we forget about the terms in any language, that which remembers or marks is there now. Mm-hmm. That is not citta, but it is the mental factor, cetasika. Citta just experience, the faculty of experience,
right,
the chief of experiencing.
Yes.
But sanya, remember, it cannot be citta.
That's right, but then it's being used to mean perception. So
it
asanya means
what
actually
you mean by perception. So what do you mean by perception? Because it's not as clear as citta and cetasika.
No.
Because there can be the words from ya, tatu, the sanya and the vinya and the panya.
Right.
Or ends with ya.
Right.
Yeah. So it knows different, differently. Like sanya, it's not that knows like citta.
So it's a different meaning of sanya,
right,
actually.
Right.
Yeah, thank you.
So what would you say in English? Because you use the term like you used just before and doubt whether this is citta or cetasika, like perception or what?
Perception would give the idea of citta.
So when you use sanya, what word do you use in English?
Memory, usually.
So no perception?
Yes, but as a mental factor accompanying the citta.
So sanya cannot be translated as perception then?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I think it's often meant and used like in the simile of the money changer, for example. So it obviously has some meaning different from what we understand by memory.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's why we cannot have just one word in English for, or in Thai for the citta and cetasika. That's why we need explanation. Yeah. And the right word, so from now, what word you use for? What do you think about perception again now? Citta or cetasika?
I think perception is okay if we understand that sanya can represent citta and cetasika.
So perception is citta and cetasika? Or what?
Well, perception is not anything. We're trying to find English words to convey what the Pali means. So when sanya is used in this context, asanya, it's conveying the meaning that there's no citta, no perception of any kind.
No citta, no cetasika.
Mm-hmm.
No sanya, no citta as well. Not
yes.
Only no citta.
Yes.
No sanya. Jitta, well.
No citta and cetasikas.
Mm-hmm.
And they use sanya for that purpose. So obviously its meaning in this context is not memory. It's something broader.
Nama.
Okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes in some sutras they refer to right sanya, actually it's referring to pointing to right understanding, but they use sanya pointing to understanding. I've forgotten which sutra it is.
Anatta sanya.
Anatta sanya, for yeah. example.
Mm-hmm.
Actually it's referring to
sanya.
Sanya with understanding.
Because it understands the anattaness.
Anattaness, yeah. yes.
Because when understanding is there, sanya is there.
Lots of other things are there too. Pasta is there.
Yes, yes, yeah.
They choose sanya.
Because now there is sanya, which, who's this and what's that all the time.
Yes.
No thought about pasta.
No.
Otherwise we have to say 52 cetasikas.
Note here, there was a comment when we were in Vietnam about, there was a discussion about sanya nimitta. So this is the sign of sanya when it's the object, when it's experience. And there was a comment about jnana, as in vipassana jnana, and what cetasikas arise, sanya arises, but no sanya nimitta. It wasn't clear at all because, as we said the other day, at moments of jnana, just like now, it is understanding of the nimitta of reality. So when it says no sanya nimitta, maybe it's just referring to the fact that sanya isn't the object. That's, I'm not sure. Do you remember?
No.
But
I think you brought up this general
subject at Gangajan, sanya nimitta, and clarified that it's a reference to when sanya is the object rather than the object of sanya being the object.
Even that is nimitta, even it's the object.
But it's not sanya nimitta, is it?
Why not? When there is the sanya can be an object.
Only sanya nimitta.
Sanya,
sanya
when
is
we talk about sanya, we mean sanya nimitta. Nimitta.
Yes. And when we're talking about
When it's object.
Any moment there are the five khandhas nimitta. Like
in
now,
what respect?
Seeing, not just one moment. It is no, vinyana nimitta.
Yes,
so sanya nimitta
now,
as well.
And sanya now.
Yeah, because it's not just a moment. As there's not only a moment of citta, there cannot be a moment of sanya to be known. For example, seeing how many moments with sanya. So sanya is also nimitta of sanya. Like seeing is nimitta of seeing.
We could say that about any reality we're talking about. Like pasa now is pasa nimitta because to be known it has to be nimitta of pasa.
Right.
This is what you mean.
To be known, yes.
Yeah, that I think was the confusion.
Right. So we're talking about when we say to be known, we mean as object of understanding.
Understanding. So if we say the sanya now and it's sanya nimitta,
it means A, Sanya has nimitta, and B, to be known, it is nimitta of Sanya.
Nimitta of Sanya, not only one.
Right.
Many.
We can say many moments of Sanya arising.
Like many moments of seeing.
Mean many moments of Sanya nimitta arising.
Nimitta, all, not one.
But if we're talking about just an explanation of how each citta has to be accompanied by cetasikas, for example, we don't talk about nimitta in that context.
We talk about just one, but can that be known even by Buddha himself?
But we're not talking about knowing, we're just talking about the description of reality.
So why we talk about nimitta? Because they appear like nimitta only.
Yes, if we're talking about what appears, I agree, we're talking about nimitta.
And with aparamada dhamma, then it will not be nimitta. So we understand what's meant by nimitta, not only one moment of reality. Right. There are many as nimitta. Now, to be known, to be directly experienced.
Yes, to be directly experienced as nimitta.
Yeah. Otherwise, pavanka must be known. Panchatvara vachana must be known. Se must be known. Sampatichana must be known.
So I think what it means is that, for example,
sanya arises now, pasa arises now. It has nimitta, even if it's not ever going to be known. And even if one's never heard the Buddha's teachings, it still has nimitta. So sanya, actually any reality, we can talk about sanya nimitta or pasa nimitta, and what it, and also it means if it was known, it would be nimitta or sanya or pasa. Just a different way of using the term, I think.
And when we talk about nimitta, we talk about nimitta of what? Nimitta of sanya, nimitta of pasa, nimitta of whatever.
We know from our study of the teachings that there must be bhavanga jittas arising at the present moment, but they are not apparent at all.
I think what I'm understanding you to say that this sort of book learning, you know, about these different jittas and jitta seekers. So we're not calling them nimitta. But it's only when it relates to understanding that it becomes, we use the word nimitta. Is that making sense of what
and
you're saying?
So
one of the reasons that it appears that there's continuity is the nimitta of visible object. So we can talk about it in the sense of what is being experienced through the sense doors at the present moment, for example. But if we were saying that there must be bhavanga jittas arising now because they arise all the time in between sense door processes.
So they are only nimitta of citta, and we cannot classify whether this moment is bhavanga or that moment is panchatvara vachana, because they are only nimitta.
I'm not sure I see what helps.
To add that bhavanga jittas
for
must
example,
be nimitta.
When we talk about jetasika and citta, we just use just one word, citta, includes cetasikas. So when we talk about any reality, we include the nimitta of it. No need to say nimitta all the time, but it's there. Otherwise, how can it appear?
You're saying nimitta of bhavanga citta is there now.
Nimitta of cittas. Because, okay, nimittas of bhavanga cannot be known now because it's not seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, right? And at moment of seeing, the nimitta of seeings appear, not just one moment of seeing. This is the world of nimitta, of that which arises and falls away in split seconds. Because
so
the
world
way
of
it
nimitta.
Is.
Yeah.
Otherwise there wouldn't be nimitta. But why there is nimitta of everything?
If bhavanga jitta never appears, then it's not necessary to talk about the nimitta of bhavanga jitta.
When there is the direct understanding of seeing and it's not hearing, there must be something in between, no matter what you call it, because it's not seeing, it's not hearing.
Or that could be the object of understanding. developed understanding.
When there's the understanding of seeing and hearing as different realities, but now they are together and separable. But when it's clear understanding, seeing cannot be hearing. So what's in between?
I think if one's understanding is to that level, then it would be appropriate to talk about the nimitta of Bhavanga Citta, if there's some comprehension of the neither seeing nor hearing, but something in between.
Otherwise, they cannot be separated.
For now, just thinking.
No word when it's there. But the understanding of each is so clear that they cannot be the same moment or the same reality.
And if there was not nimitta?
If Bhavanga Citta didn't have nimitta, then it couldn't be known. So it's implied whenever we read or hear about Bhavanga Citta.
We can say that if it's not seeing and it's not hearing, there must be something in between the two. That's not understanding of the characteristic
of Bhavanga. But the understanding of seeing and the understanding of hearing,
yes,
they're different. They cannot arise together.
Right.
So that which is in between.
Yes, but isn't that assumed rather than directly known?
When you say that seeing is not hearing and they cannot arise together, there must be in between. You don't have to name it or call it, but the understanding knows that what is there.
Right. Understanding knows something is there in between.
You don't have to call it anything.
Right.
Because they do not appear as seeing and hearing.
Right.
But it's there.
But when you say there must be something in between, it sounds like, well, one is
Buddha said that they are Bhavanga.
Sure.
If Buddha wouldn't say that, there are something. We don't call it Bhavanga.
No.
But Buddha said that is Bhavanga.
Right, but Buddha said non-self too.
But
one has to actually
see it. But when seeing and hearing appears, different moment, is there anything in between? Well, and uncountable, we don't count 1, 2, 3, 4, we don't know how much.
I'm accepting, of course, that there is something in between. But,
yeah, and no matter you call it what.
That's not understanding.
No matter you call it what, something is Bhavanga.
Yeah.
What you say, something, it is Bhavanga.
Right. But that's, on my part, there's no understanding involved in that. It's just...
But when there is the clear understanding of seeing and hearing, what in between is there? Even you don't say, I don't know it, but it's there. No one can know it because it's without the vara or vichitita, but it's there.
Your question is that Bhavanga should be known, like seeing or smelling,
No.
So what's your... I'm a little bit still confusing. Your question is?
I'm not asking you a question. I'm just discussing the nature of Bhavanga Citta.
I have a question.
Well, like, if you, we know intellectually there's the difference between seeing and hearing.
So it's not like the moment of direct appearing, direct understanding, direct awareness of the difference. It's there.
Right, but it's like there's a difference between seeing. Seeing process arises, falls away. It's only by hearing that we know there's Bhavanga in between. Why could it not happen that the seeing process followed immediately by a hearing process?
What's my point?
The point was that seeing appears, seeing can be known now, hearing appears, but the Bhavanga Citta's, it's just thinking about, because we've read the details, that there must be Bhavanga Citta's in between. Well,
like now, we know that seeing is not hearing.
Yes.
And when there is seeing, there is no hearing. And when there is no hearing, there is no seeing. And one knows that there must be Bhavanga in between. Unknown, because it's not like seeing. It's not like hearing. But it's there, in between seeing and hearing. right? Or there's nothing in between. Is there something in between or nothing in between? This is understanding intellectually about seeing and hearing and pavanga, but when it's direct understanding, it opens up.
Opens up. The truth. Okay, right. Because it's my way of thinking is like the seeing, and if this hearing immediately following, then
not immediately.
I guess. No, and I guess there that's just from Bawang. Book. There must be
yes, Bawang that is from
in between.
And now, but when it's higher understanding,
right,
clear
it gets,
understanding,
it knows,
opens up.
Opens up is a good explanation. Yeah. Yes.
And actually, it's like it seems like there's
no understanding, but it's like any other right intellectual understanding. Like when one reads about how Sampatichana and Santirana cheetahs follow seeing or hearing. It's not directly known, but it's what we have read and we've considered and considered rightly that they're just these dharmas which are nata that follow that are also result and how there cannot be kusala or akusala cheetahs immediately following seeing and at the end of the process before there's another process of cheetahs there must be the bawanga cheetahs because it's the bawanga cheetahs that are interrupted by a process. So when that process is finished, it's back to what has been interrupted.
Sorry to interrupt this discussion, but it's time for lunch. Maybe we can continue after lunch.
But you see that we can understand this theoretically, so it's not clear. But when it's clear, see, it must be different. Otherwise, how can we talk about the clear understanding, the vipassanayana and so on?